Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Kane in the punch, and it's blocked! It's moving inside the five, and it is going to be covered by the Saints for a touchdown! Oh, baby! What a moment! Just listen to this crowd!
As the voice of the legend himself, Jim Henderson, we got him on our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line. Jim, great to have you on with us again here on Second Guess.
Thank you, Mike. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Was that a spiritual? That was much more than a football game. Just hearing that call, I get goosebumps. That had to be for you also like a spiritual experience.
Well, it was to just get in the dome that night. I remember walking in with Hokey. We both were crying because it was so emotional. But when that happened, it was probably one of the worst calls I've ever made because it was so emotional. And you can hear Hokey. He was so excited that I'm trying to think, is that the right guy? Do we have the right guy blocking the kick? Did the Saints really score the touchdown? So, I mean, I hear that call all the time, but most of the time I hear Mike Tirico's call, which was really the good one.
Jim, when you think back at it, and a lot of people, y'all over-exaggerate sports, okay? And you can make that argument if you want, okay? But here's my thing. Back then, what the Saints did united a community on something good happening when they really needed it. It was really the bond between the people here, and it was so crazy. You know, like, I still live on the bayou, so I'm 60 miles west of New Orleans. We got wind, but the levees held up. There was really not a ton of damage there. But, you know, when you were talking to people from New Orleans or where the levees broke at, that thing was, okay, they would talk a little bit about, man, what about the Saints? Okay, that was such a, to me, almost like, okay, you got to be kidding me. You lost your home and everything in it, and you worried about talking about the Saints at this stage? But it goes to show what sports can do for a community.
Without question. You know, there are certain games that the Saints have played in that I could swear before the game, this is a game the Saints are going to win or can't win because of the emotion. And that was a game I knew the Saints were going to win. I can remember playing the Giants in New York in the first game after 9/11. You knew the Saints couldn't win that game. The opening of this season that we're talking about in 2005, when we went to Carolina and the emotion that the Saints had, I said, there's no way that the Panthers are going to win this game, which of course they didn't. But the outpouring of emotion for that game and what it meant to the city and what it meant to the fandom all around the world, I've always thought this was a show. ESPN should have done a 30 for 30 on this because it's such a great show. And to my knowledge, at least, it's really never been examined enough, the connection between this team and Drew and what it meant to come back as winners and what they eventually did, 3 years later. It's one of the greatest stories in sports, and I don't think it's ever been examined enough.
Well, you know, Jim, Sean Payton, when the media was talking to him after the past preseason game with Denver coming to town with the Broncos, Sean says, yeah, everyone remembers the Super Bowl season and winning the Super Bowl. But he was saying that he believes that really, as far as the city and the region, the Gulf South, the Gulf Coast and everything, that 2006 season was even more important than winning the Super Bowl, simply because all that adversity and that what it meant. You know, all of a sudden the Saints are in the NFC Championship game. It happened so fast and just feeling good, coming back, reopening the dome, and it was much bigger than football. So in his opinion, and I agree with this, that, okay, it's great that you won the Super Bowl, but as far as when you look at the totality of everything, that 2006 season, then when that occurred, like, we're back. The Saints are back, and that's what made it so special. And Sean reflects on that, and how and talk about him and Drew and that relationship, how it all came together. No, that's like a feel-good movie when you look at the end result. And I remember Sean saying this, that game we called against Atlanta, we opened the dome, fit to truly be special. We can't just participate. We got to win. You know, it's like we reopened the dome, but we got to win the game or it won't be special.
Yeah, and that 2006 season really validated Sean as a head coach and the Saints as a team that should be reckoned as a contender, not just this feel-good story for 1 year. And you know, I remember I'm looking at some of the highlights in coming up to this game and looking at Reggie Bush when he played against the Cardinals and returning punts and just the spark he gave that team and the city. And they'd had that great draft. And it all just validated that, you know, maybe we're onto something here. And 2 years later, 3 years later, they're into the Super Bowl and winning it.
You know, Jim, you know who would have the Reggie Bush impact if this would occur in the future? Now, I'm just making a good movie because when Reggie Bush came, I remember we did the draft during the day. It wasn't prime time then. It was like a festival. There's no way Reggie Bush could live up to all the expectations.
Nobody.
I mean, they're like he'd have to be Superman. I said, and Reggie Bush ended up being very good.
Yes, he was.
I mean, I still think Darren Sproles is better. But anyway, but Reggie Bush was unbelievable. But you know who could top that? I think if Archie Manning's grandson would be the quarterback of the Saints. That, to me, would be like Reggie Bush, not 2.0, but above and beyond Reggie Bush with Arch.
Let Arch start a couple games in Texas first.
Yeah, but I'm just saying how you know, fans come up to me now, Jim, and they go like, oh, you think we're going to get Arch? I said, I don't know what's going to happen, depending where the Saints are picking and all that. But they said, boy, that would be a surreal thing. Archie Manning's grandson, the future, like the, you know, the second coming of Drew Brees, you know, with the Saints and leading the team.
Well, if this team plays like most people think they will, midway through the season, there are going to be a lot of Saints fans saying, tank the rest of the season. We're not going to do anything anyway. Let's lose as many as we can to solidify our number one draft pick or close to it and get Arch Manning.
Yeah, no, that's the mindset. And
Believe me, you're going to hear it a lot. Jim, the crazy part about 06 is, and Sean told the story about he had talked to the Packers, and Ted Thompson and the Packers went in a different direction for the head coach. And, okay, you signed a quarterback, and there had not been a quarterback come back from this type surgery on the shoulder before with Drew Brees. And when Zach was here, Zach told me, Mike, I didn't know if he could play because we 3 weeks into training camp, I'd never seen him throw a football more than 21, 22 yards. I was wondering, man, what's going to happen to us? But he said that final preseason game or the third preseason game, man, he cut one loose. And Zach said, man, I felt really good about it because I knew he had talent and he was accurate. But he said, okay, I mean, we can't play a full season with a guy who can't throw the football more than 20 yards downfield.
Well, he gutted out his career for the most part until his arm really did show those effects late in his career. And everybody knew he couldn't throw 25 yards downfield. And I'm sure you've seen recently where he talks about he can't even play catch in the backyard with his sons because he can't throw the ball that far.
You know, Jim, when you look at the success and how long it lasted with Sean Payton and Drew Brees and all the games that you've called, and organizations sometimes don't want to, admit this, but the Saints are rebuilding now. And it's like post Drew Brees, Sean Payton. So what are your expectations with the team? Because I'm telling the fans, you better be patient. And, you know, no one wants to be
good
patient.
Good buddy.
No one wants to be patient anymore. So what advice would you give the Houdat Nation? And, you know, because I think we got the right coach. We got the youngest head coach right now, Kellen Moore. But what advice you'd give the fans?
Well, I think you're right. I think, you know, you're always going to have the – excuse me for saying this, but the lunatic fringe of Saints fans who are ready to write off the season based on the first bad snap of preseason. And then you've got the others where if the Saints are 0-16, well, we're on our way. We're going to win the next one and win the Super Bowl. But I think most fans with a measured look at this team and realizing, and Hokie and I used to talk about this all the time, I'm sure you guys did too, this is going to be a huge wake-up call for this fandom and this organization when Drew goes. Sean meant a lot to the team. Reggie did. All the great players they had. But you'll never be able to imagine what anybody could do to replace Drew Brees in so many ways. The way he set the tone for the team, the way he was such a great spokesperson, how consistent he was, how much the fans rallied around him. I think probably Archie would say the same thing. They'll never be another Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Not in our lifetime.
Well, you know what, Jim? There's a lot of NFL teams like that. You never want to be the man to replace the man. You remember like the John Elway and the Broncos? They still look, and then they had to go get an older veteran in Peyton Manning. And all of a sudden,
what's happened with Marino and the Dolphins?
Yeah, and now Sean Payton thinks he has that in Bo Nix. But look, the Dolphins are still looking, even though Tua, up and down. But that's it. I think the man trying to replace the man, he's gone, Derek Carr. So I think we're off on a different direction. But the question I have for you, Jim, and fans are this, what is the great Jim Henderson? What is Jim Henderson doing this day and age? I mean, I know he loves to fish. Is he fishing all the time, or does he watch the Saints, or does he watch the NFL or watch football? What are you doing with your time?
I watch the Saints. I'm a great Saints fan, so I approach it from that way. Wouldn't miss any of their games. Wouldn't miss trying to stay up with them through you guys and everybody. But for the most part right now, I'm rehabilitating a shoulder where I fractured my left shoulder in three places, falling in my living room like 3 weeks ago. So right now I'm in a sling and rehabbing, but that too shall pass. But I'm just a fan. And living up here in Poplarville, it's really not easy to get into the Dome to see games in person. So I've just gotten a 77-inch TV that I'm enjoying right now.
Well, yeah, Ken, it might put a little hard to go fishing with your shoulder, but I know you enjoy fishing also, right?
I do. Thanks, Bobby. Yeah, that's kind of our passion up here. It's a real quiet place to live, and fishing's good, and so I'm very satisfied in retirement. I miss certain things about the games. I mean, when the Saints win a big game, especially with a really good performance, and they win it in the last minute or whatever, it's hard to equate that with anything else that you do as a broadcaster. I've always said, being the play-by-play voice of a team in games like that is as close to playing or coaching as you could get because you share in that emotion. Conversely, you also share in it when they get beat in the last second and you feel like you've been kicked in the gut because that's the way the team has felt too.
Jim, it's so funny you say that. I was talking to Rick Venturi this morning, and he told me to tell you hello. I told him we were going to have you on. And then Rick is like, Mike, tell Jim I said hello. But he said, I want you guys to understand this. And he said, I'm not the guy who come up with this. But everybody wants to rebuild until they see what it looks like. And it's not normally pretty in a rebuild. But he said, ask Jim this one question. He said, because we all go through, if it's coaching or in the profession, broadcasting, of the highs and lows. And the highs you can see. What was the most depressing call you've made in the booth?
Was it Cleveland and Ditka with the Hail Mary?
That was one of the worst.
That's one of them.
That's where I went on the air the next day on a commentary and said Tom Benson should sell the team. And that struck a nerve with him. And the next game we did, I got down to do the Ditka interview pregame in the locker room. And he said, I don't know who you're working for, but you better get off this high horse about Tom Benson selling the team. He's never going to sell the team. Get off that crap. And I looked at him. I said, can we do the interview now? And he said, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but that was Mike. I mean, you caught about, they always said he had, like the 50 faces of Eve. But sometimes you catch Mike – and he gives you like seven or eight faces of it all within about 5 minutes. That was just who Ditka was.
Yeah, they called him Sybil because he had so many different personalities. And you really didn't know what you were going to get from week to week and almost day to day with him. And sometimes I remember sharing a ride with him in the car one time. We were just going out to dinner, I think, on the road. And he didn't even acknowledge me. Wouldn't even say hello. And this is the guy I did the show with.
Go ahead, though. Did we lose Jim?
Did we lose him, Charlie?
Oh, we got to call him back. Yeah. We got to call Jim back.
Yeah, we got to get back Jim back on.
No, get Joe. I can do the radio till 9 talking to Jim Henderson.
Yeah.
You know, this. Yeah,
tell you what, we're going to go to a break, and then we come back. We'll try to get Jim on, and we'll talk to him some more about some of his memories, Katrina, and also calling games with the Saints.
I have a great memory, I'm telling you, of a white-knuckle memory with Jim Henderson. And it's dealing with the Saints and Patriots who went practice against them in training camp.
Okay, we'll be back with more second guests right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on the second guest show, Mike DeTeglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We had the Silver Slipper Casino beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby J and I will be here until 8 o'clock tonight. We got some problems with the phone lines, and so we're not able to reconnect with Jim. But Bob, you're telling me a story about you gave Jim the white knuckler one day trying to drive him to the airport.
Well, not him. It was the whole hokey, everybody.
What
it was, we... The Saints were practicing against the Patriots. And, you know, you go to a joint practice in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
So it went at the Greenbrier. You know,
that's what I was going to say.
No, they had came to the Greenbrier, so now we're going up there to practice. So we're trying to do two things, you know, kill a bird, kind of thing. And I said, we're not going to make this flight. We're not going to make it. We're going to get there late, and it's a matter of, like, a bunch of hours that if we don't make this flight till we get back home, until we get back to, New Orleans. So I said, no, we're going to make it. I'm driving. And so when Matthews get on the highway, and so Jim wanted to sit in the front seat. And if you're scared, say you're scared. I think Jim was scared. I go, Jim, don't worry. It's all right. And, you know, the passing lane, don't get in the passing lane. So I'm getting into the airport, and we got there. And Jim Henderson was like, "Man, I'm so glad we made it." I said, "I told you we were gonna make it," and then I'm telling him, and then I'm telling, "I told you we were gonna make the flight," and so we made the flight, but I think I scared Jim Henderson getting to the airport to make it on time to catch the flight to come back home after the Saints practicing against the Patriots. And the one thing, you know, you get up in age, you can't necessarily do all what you like. Like a satisfaction, do you still like to? I know he likes to fish. You know, he'd go fishing with Ron Maestri and all. They go up there, and then the coach. I can't think of his name now. The basketball coach from LSU. Is it Coach John Brady? I'm IMAX. Jim's back. Jim. I was just telling the story. I don't know if you remember. And I was the designated driver, we had to make the flight when the Saints were going against the Patriots, and you in the front seat with me, and you kind of look at me like I was crazy, and I said, Jim, don't worry, we're going to make the flight. And we finally made it there, and you were looking at me like, man, I'm so glad we made it. You remember that white-knuckle experience a little bit? I mean, I was like a New York taxi driver.
There were a lot of those, it seems like.
To get there, we're going to make this flight. And Jim, you know what I wanted to ask you? Because, you know, what do you do in different phases in your life? And you were always an outstanding tennis player. Do you watch, like, the U.S. Open? Or are you able to even maybe casually hit the ball back and forth? Or do you watch the U.S. Open? Talk about your tennis days now, because I know you're an avid tennis player.
Well, I was at one point. You give me far too much credit for being any good, but I've had both my knees replaced. So that
know that feeling. Sure. One of them.
You've had one done?
About 10 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you need another one just to keep it company.
Well, believe me, it won't be too much longer.
Yeah. You know, it tells you when you got to do it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So Jim, do you watch tennis too, like football? Do you like an interest like Wimbledon, U.S. Open, like the majors or what?
No, you know, Bobby, the only sport I really concentrate on now is the NFL and certainly the Saints. I don't think I could name you three male professional tennis players or women tennis players. And I think it's part of the game is in transition right now with a whole new group of people coming up. But I mean, there are so many people now, I have no idea who they are. And I'm just a casual fan like everybody else.
And you know what, Jim, we're talking about fishing, and I was mentioning it. I know you have camaraderie, like with Ron Maestri, when y'all fish. And then was it Coach Brady? If that's who? No, not Coach Brady. It was he coached the Hornets. Or he's a professional in your Chicago Bulls.
Tim Floyd.
Oh, man, I was thinking John Brady. Not John Brady, Tim Floyd. So I know that's been your fishing buddies through the years.
Yeah, Brady's been on Floyd's staff, and he's been up here a lot. And there are some great Tim Floyd stories and great John Brady stories with Tim Floyd. There really could be a great book written by Tim about what he's done in his career and had done to him. And another person I think would have a great book, well, he can't now, but I mean, he could have contributed while he was still alive, was Dan Simmons. I thought he could have had a great book for Saints fans based on, along with Silky, all the players he was with and the times that he had with them. And, you know, I don't want to belabor this too much, but, you know, you're talking about the memories of Katrina. When the Saints were going to fly out for the fourth game of preseason, that was the weekend of Katrina. As I recall, Katrina came in on Monday, and that Saturday, Channel 4 had a big staff meeting where they were going to show off and tell everybody what their role was going to be for covering Katrina. Well, being in sports, you never felt like you were more in the toy department of life than being in sports while this was going to go on. And I talked to our news director, Sandy Breland, at the time. She was so busy, and rightly so, and had so much on her mind. I said, you know, the only thing is the Saints are going to Oakland to play their fourth preseason game, and I really should be able to tell them whether I'm going or not. And she said, all right, well, we're going to have this big staff meeting on Saturday, and we'll tell you then. So I came in on Saturday for the staff meeting. It might have been at like 10 in the morning. And they said, okay, you can go to Oakland to call the game. So I got in the car to get out to the airport to fly to Oakland on the charter. And I was going down Airline Highway because I knew the interstate would be all clogged up. And Airline Highway was nothing more than a parking lot. People were stopping their cars, leaving them running, getting out and going into any convenience store or any sort of place where they could buy beer or ice or any sort of things like that. So I'm looking at my clock. I said, I'm never going to make this flight, which I didn't. And the Saints went to Oakland. And here's a good trivia question for you. Tell people, you can't look at the internet, but tell me what the final fourth game of preseason result was and what the score was. Can you even remember?
I think the Raiders won that game, correct?
They did. Can you remember the score?
No, that I don't remember.
Well, you know, it was such a chaotic time that I didn't even know the score for days. There was no way to get it.
Right.
And I didn't know who had won the game or what the score was. And like 3 or 4 days later, we found out the Raiders had won the game 16-13, and the Saints finished 1-3. But it was such a bizarro world at that time. Everything was out of kilter. I think I've missed three games during my career covering the Saints or doing their play-by-play. And that was one of them in which they lost to the Raiders. But everything was such, you know, you hated to place any sort of priority on sports when this was going on in your city, in your state, in your region. I remember Hokie would have said, you know, it's, when you're in sports at that time, it's like being tits on a bull. You really were superfluous to life. And that was just part of a very bizarre time.
Now, Jim, that preseason, if I can recall, so that was the Raiders game was post-Katrina. So right before Katrina hit, was that the Ravens game on Friday night?
Yes.
That went in the zone.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was on the last flight out of Moisant, out of Louis Armstrong Airport. When they still had AirTran, which was bought out by Southwest. So I can remember, here I am, Jimmy, talking about you being like in the news and all on TV. And now you got to cover the Katrina, a hurricane episode and what's occurring. I remember that I'm doing the post game because it's a night game, and we're on until 1 in the morning. Yeah. I never thought this. I'm like a meteorologist. I'm given the longitude, latitude of the hurricane. And I'm like, what in the world do I know? And then I remember we just hit the dome, and then all the tragedy of it was so surreal. Just all the people on the ramps.
Yeah.
After when the flooding occurred. No, that was like, whoa. It was so like surreal. Is this really happening? It was unbelievable. Yeah.
Trust Bobby Hebert for your hurricane coverage.
Jim, I would say that's probably not the best thing to do.
No.
Though he was given what they get put in front of him.
No, I felt like Nash Roberts with my stick. You know? Never good old Nash.
Yeah. Jim, one of the things is, too, you know, when Garland worked at the station, he would – always tell a story. Man, you and him, man, it really meshed so well between the two of y'all on television. And then he comes back into the journalism world on WWL. But the relationship between you and Garland, it was something because always kind of picking on one another a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the guy. Love the guy. Still do every single day. Yeah, great guy. I mean, one of the things that was the best about that era at Channel 4, and it was a legendary era, is people really didn't have egos. I mean, we could pick at each other. I don't think anybody took themselves too seriously. And if they brought in somebody who did, they really weren't there for very long. They were on their way out. But, when you were talking, when people at your station called me about being on to talk about Katrina, I'm sure they had to have Garland on for hours because he had the greatest Katrina stories of ever. And I recall somebody saying, and it might have been him, we were all so upset by the lack of communication and, you know, cell phones weren't working, nothing was working. And it might have been Garland who said that. He had two or three cell phones, and at the height of his frustration, he took them out and put them all behind the back wheels of his car and backed over them.
Yeah, I could see Garland doing that.
That sounds like somebody.
Can you see Garland doing that?
Yeah, I could see it. Now, he's not a Bayou boy, but it's close. He's a River Parish guy. Jim, thanks so much for joining us. Man, great memories. And thanks so much for recalling those times with Katrina and certainly all the years you did it. No one's been better, partner.
And
you one of one.
And Jim, make sure you get that shoulder right. Do your rehab now.
Yes,
you have to be a good patient. Be a good patient.
I will. It's great talking to you guys again.
All right, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Man, what a unbelievable voice. And, you know, you almost automatically, when you heard his voice, you knew it was something to do with the Saints.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.